Right, this morning we're in Mark's Gospel, chapter 5, and it's on page 1007 in the Church Bible. Starting at verse 1. They went across the lake to the region of the Gerasenes. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an evil spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This man lived in the tombs, and no one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he had often been chained, hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. When he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran and fell on his knees in front of him. He shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? Swear to God that you won't torture me." For Jesus had said to him, "Come out of this man, you evil spirit." Then Jesus asked him, "What is your name?" "My name is Legion," he replied, "for we are many." And he begged Jesus to, again and again, not to send them out of the area. A large herd of pigs was feeding on the nearby hillside. The demons begged Jesus, "Send us among the pigs, allow us to go into them." He gave them permission, and the evil spirits came out and went into the pigs. The herd, about 2,000 in number, rushed down the steep bank into the lake and were drowned. Those tending the pigs ran off and reported this in the town and countryside. And the people went out to see what had happened. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who had been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. As Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, "Go home to your family and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you." So the man went away and began to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus had done for him. And all the people were amazed.
Excellent. Do keep your Bibles open in front of you. That's the bit that we're going to be looking at today, Mark chapter 5, verses 1 to 20. Let me just get some bits organised up here, sorry. Right. All sorts of things change, don't they? Our country's in a time of change. And our lives can so easily change. And change is something that's very interesting to see how something was, to see what it's like afterwards. You sometimes see those ridiculous adverts, don't you? Those sort of American infomercials, the one that start in black and white. Some poor soul is struggling through their whole life, making a mess of things, stuff falling out of their cupboards. They don't know how to open a jar. They can't do any of these things. But then this amazing product arrives, and now everything's in Technicolor and everything is wonderful. What an amazing turnaround. And they show these before and after shots of the power of this new product. I saw a video of all the amazing beginning parts of these videos. You know, a combination for about 5 minutes of people who can't quite reach the remote that's on the floor, or of people who can't quite keep their food fresh, or who can't quite hang up their hose pipe, or all those things that just make life so bad, don't they? And then suddenly the looks on their faces as, "We're in colour now. I can keep all my food fresh and chop up all those eggs with that little chop, chop, chop thing." The before shot of how terrible it was and the after shot of how wonderful it is afterwards. As Christians, I wonder what that would look like for us. I wonder if we'd be able to see what the black and white photo of us in the past would have been when we weren't just struggling with stupid little problems, but real things, and with our sin. and the aftershot, now, what it is like afterwards, now that we know the Lord Jesus. It is hard to sometimes remember what that was like. Well, in the passage that we just read, we get to witness a remarkable before and after, a remarkable change. And it teaches us loads about the Lord Jesus, and it teaches us what he has come to do for each of us. The last time we looked at Mark's gospel was back in May, and we were reading about Jesus and his disciples sailing across a lake. It's in the verses just before this. They were caught in a massive storm and they almost drowned until Jesus spoke a word and calmed the storm. Well, now here they are. They've reached their destination. They're in the region of the Gerasenes, who knows. It's a mostly Gentile area. It's not many Jewish people here. And one of the ways you can tell that is that there's a nearby pig farm. There's a few folks from church heading to Israel later this year. I doubt you will see many pigs on your travels. In kosher Israel, the pigs are unclean animals. So we know this is a step. Jesus is taking a deliberate step out of Judah for the first time in his ministry, into new territory, potentially hostile territory. What's he going to find there? Well, no sooner does he arrive than he is confronted by the destructive power of evil. The destructive power of evil. Verse 2. When Jesus got out of the boat, a man with an impure spirit came from the tombs to meet him. This is a man totally under the destructive power of evil. We're told he has an impure spirit. We sometimes use the word spirit, don't we, to talk about what someone's like. They're mean-spirited or something like that. Well, no, that's not what this means. This means he was oppressed and attacked and under the horrible influence of an evil spirit, a demon. That's not something we're very familiar with in our time and in our day. But the Bible is clear that evil is real, that evil is personal, that there are things in this world that we can't see but are absolutely there. Spiritual beings that stand opposed to God and opposed to everything that's good. And this man that we're meeting here has the misfortune to be particularly terrorized by evil in a more direct way than any of us have probably experienced. Hear how his life's described in verse 3 to 5. It's certainly an extreme situation. This man lived in the tombs. No one could bind him anymore, not even with a chain. For he'd often been chained, hand and foot, but he tore the chains apart and broke the irons on his feet. No one was strong enough to subdue him. Night and day, among the tombs and in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. It's a pretty scary picture, isn't it? This wild man living out in the graveyards up in the mountains. A man who spends all day, all night howling, shrieking. It's like something from a horror film, isn't it? You can imagine people in the town warning their children not to go out after dark, or the man in the hills will get you. And this man was a menace. I mean, what do you have to do to get your neighbours repeatedly trying to chain you up? He was a danger to himself. He was a danger to other people. So they kept on locking him up. But it never worked. He always managed to escape. This evil power within him was powerful. It gave him a strength nobody could control. No one was strong enough to subdue him. That sounds like a challenge, doesn't it? If we've read Mark's gospel so far, no one's strong enough to subdue him. Should make us go, no one? We'll see about that. But so far, he can't be tamed. He can't be restrained. This is a destructive power. And so he's outcast. He's sent away from civilized society. He's sent away where the wild things are. We're told three times he lived among the tombs, lived in the tombs even, wandering about the caves with the corpses. It's a deadly, unclean, morbid place for this man held under the power of evil. Isn't it tragic? Imagine being this man. What would it be like to be terrorized in this way, to be driven away from your home and your family? Verse 5 talks about how night and day, among the tombs, in the hills, he would cry out and cut himself with stones. What a life. Some of us will know something of that. But this is a waking nightmare, really, isn't it? Loneliness and self-harm and despair. This man's a very, very extreme case. And it's easy to see how different he is from us. We don't live in the graveyard. We don't need tying down. But none of us are actually a million miles away from him. Because this is a picture of what sin does, what evil always does. It destroys. It destroys. It dehumanizes. Satan hates God. And since people are made in God's image, Satan hates us as well. He wants to destroy us. The grave, that's where sin and evil want to put us. And so even without being possessed, each of us has been in the grip of evil. Our own sin does this to us. Our own sin cuts us off from other people, makes us do things that just make no sense and are self-destructive. Sin leads to death. It always hurts in the end. So this man is a vivid picture of all of us at one point or another, captive to sin, heading for death, out of control. I wonder if we recognize ourselves in that. We were singing earlier, "Long my imprisoned spirit lay, fast bound in sin and nature's night." Do you actually think that's true? Do you actually think that's what your situation was? Well, this man is the before shot of everybody before they meet Jesus. But it isn't just a picture. He was a real man with real, very severe problems that he can't solve, and the people around him are powerless to solve as well. He is the destructive power of evil. And so it does beg that question, can anybody do it? As we said, no one's strong enough to subdue him. In a world without Jesus, that's absolutely true. There is no one who can deal with this person or anybody like him. But if somebody can, if somebody can step in and deal with someone like that, well, then maybe there's hope for all of us. And in walks Jesus. And this is what we see next. The merciful power of Jesus. The merciful power of Jesus. It's absolute chaos, isn't it? And yet in comes the one person with the power to set people free. Jesus has just overcome and survived a storm. But as soon as he's on dry land, evil comes at him again as this demon-possessed man approaches. Verse 6 and 7, when he saw Jesus from a distance, he ran, fell on his knees in front of him, and he shouted at the top of his voice, "What do you want with me, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? In God's name, don't torture me." We see this clash of powers, but straight away we see that Jesus is the supreme power. The unconquerable, unchainable, destructive power of evil has met its match. He comes before Jesus and throws himself at his feet. Jesus steps off the boat. Immediately, this man somehow knows his name, his identity, and his mission. He knows his name. He calls him Jesus. He knows his identity. He says, "Son of the Most High God." That's exactly who Mark has introduced Jesus to us back in Mark chapter 1, verse 1. This is the good news about Jesus the Messiah, Son of God. So this man is absolutely right about Jesus' identity. And he knows something of his mission as well when he says, "Don't torture me," because he knows that Jesus came into the world to deal with evil, to destroy and defeat Satan, to push back the darkness, to bring in God's kingdom and rescue people in the grip of sin. And so when faced with Jesus, this scary man is scared out of his wits of Jesus. Demons cower before him. And rightly so. Their days are numbered. Jesus has come to destroy them. There is a day of judgment coming. And this man, this demonized man, is afraid that might be now when he says, what do you want with me? You know, he's begging on his knees for his life. There's a lot of begging in this section. That's one way we know it's just such a desperate situation. Verse 10 talks about he begged Jesus again and again. Verse 12, the demons begged Jesus. Verse 17, the people began to plead with Jesus. It's actually the same word, beg. Verse 18, the man begged to go with Jesus. There's just desperation through the whole thing. Because Jesus is powerful and he is the one whose mercy we are at. We are at his mercy. Please, Jesus, I'm begging you. But thankfully, mercy is exactly what Jesus gives. Jesus has come to show mercy to this man, ridding him of the evil. And so he says in verse 8, come out of this man, you evil spirit. Or perhaps spirits might be more accurate. Verse 9, Jesus asked him, what is your name? My name is Legion, he replied, for we are many. It's far worse than they'd originally thought. We are many, says the demons. They're a legion. A legion in the Roman army was the biggest group you could get. It's about 5,000 soldiers. So to call himself legion is to say there are loads of them and that they are very, very strong. The evil was like an army. And like the Roman army, it was an unwelcome, unjust, occupying force. It did not belong there. I wonder with the politics of the time whether some of Mark's first readers would have raised a smile at just how easily Jesus gets rid of a legion, how that's just dealt with. As Jesus has so much power over evil. And then what happens next is one of the strangest things, I think, in the New Testament. It's one of the big questions. I don't know if you ever have friends ask you big questions before. Why does God allow suffering? Or what about other religions? And what's the deal with all those pigs? Have you ever had that one? I have had that a few times. It is a strange thing here. It does add a strange twist to the tale, like a pig. It's a very odd thing. As this herd of pigs on the hillside, and Jesus casts out the evil spirits into the pigs, who then go crazy, and then they all jump off into the lake and drown. It is a very, very strange story. I saw a newspaper headline a number of years ago about a flood in Australia which destroyed a piggery. And the quote from the farmer was, we've probably lost about 30,000 pigs in the floods. And then the next day the paper issued a correction. What the farmer had actually said was 30 sows and pigs. So the journalist had misheard him. He'd made this massive story out of something that really was quite small. But here in chapter four, Mark chapter 5, this isn't a typo. This is 2,000 pigs dying in this particular incident. What is going on? Well, I think this shows us a number of things. It proves that Jesus really did cast out the demons. It makes this thing that would otherwise be invisible very visual, very graphic. How else do you explain that, these pigs sort of acting like lemmings? It demonstrates that Jesus really was dealing with a lot of demons as the whole herd goes down. It emphasizes the triumph of Jesus as the waves that were just a few verses earlier trying to swallow him up take the enemy instead. It highlights how destructive evil is. As soon as the spirits are in the pigs, they're driven mad and kill themselves. Pigs actually can swim. They can actually swim. This is maybe slightly strange. Here's a couple of pigs in the Bahamas, in case you don't believe me. There is a beach in the Bahamas with loads of pigs that, lucky pigs. But these ones drown. Why do they do that? Pigs can swim. Why do they do that? Well, there's something enormously destructive has been unleashed upon them. And this doesn't this show us the value of a human being, that the evil spirits do the killing of the pigs. This is not something that Jesus does, but it is clear that Jesus values this one man's life over the whole herd of pigs. And we ought to treat animals well. Proverbs talks about how the righteous care for the needs of their animals. That's absolutely right. But people are more precious. You are more valuable than a whole field of any other kind of creatures. Other people thought this man was worthless. He has been sent away. He has been written off. But he is significant. He is valuable as a person made in God's image, as are we all. And so Jesus treats him with dignity. He says to him that his life matters to him. And that your life matters to him. Whatever you look like, or wherever you're from, or whatever you do, or any of those things, whatever anybody else would value your life at, Jesus values your life enormously. And so he shows mercy to this suffering man. Now, after all the squeals and the chaos have died away, look at what's left in verse 15. When they came to Jesus, they saw the man who'd been possessed by the legion of demons sitting there, dressed and in his right mind, and they were afraid. See, the crowds of people flock to see what's going on, and what they see is an amazing, startling transformation. I mean, compare it to the beginning of the section in verses 1 to 5. What a dramatic change. He was bursting out of chains, refusing to be held down, and here he is now, sitting still, nice and calm. He was clothed, which implies that he was running around naked before. No more howling, no more shouting, no more attacking himself, no more attacking other people. He is in his right mind, sitting still, perfectly civilized, as if nothing is wrong. As before and afters go, that is astonishing, isn't it? This man was a force of nature. He was set to kill, but Jesus calms the storm in his life. I often think about a friend of mine, how before he became a Christian, he was not right. This was someone who could not look you in the eye. He physically could not sit still. And yet, I heard that he had put his trust in Jesus. One of those people where you said, sorry, are you sure? What? Where did that come from? And I can't explain it, but the next time I met him, he was sitting there in his right mind. Now, like everybody else, there were still problems, these things that take time to resolve, but it really was fundamentally like I was talking to a different person because of the merciful power of Jesus. Jesus hates evil, but he loves people who are caught up in its web. He loves to set them free. And we see that in one little detail, which I just find it absolutely incredible. In chapter 4, verse 35, Jesus says, "Let us go over to the other side." So they get in their boats and nearly die in a storm. Chapter 5, verse 1, Jesus gets out of the boat, meets this man and sets him free. Verse 18 shows him getting back in the boat. And verse 21, he's over the other side again where he started. Do you see? Jesus went all the way through that, including the storm, just for this one man. He goes through all of that, reaches this one man, braves the storm, reaches the one individual, crosses the sea to meet somebody people normally cross the street to avoid, and then goes home again. This is his whole mission in miniature. Jesus came to save sinners. Jesus came for people who are beyond hope. People like you and me. How amazing, how great is the merciful power of Jesus. This book of Mark is written to get us to respond to Jesus, to show us who he is, show us what he came to do, and then get us to respond to him. So let's see how the people did respond. Well, in verse 15, when the people see the man, we're told they were afraid. They used to be afraid of the wild demon man of the hills. Now they're afraid of Jesus. Who is this man that even demons obey him? Now, that could be a good thing. It's right to fear Jesus in the sense of respect and awe. But sadly, this is the kind of fear that makes them say, "Go away." go away. Verse 16. Those who had seen it told the people what had happened to the demon-possessed man and told about the pigs as well. Then the people began to plead with Jesus to leave their region. So they've seen the whole thing, and their conclusion is, go away. Please just leave. Just go away. And I wonder if that makes sense. They've just watched their livelihood jump in a lake. Pigs worth hundreds of thousands of pounds in today's money, sunk to the bottom of the sea. They're not coming back. Whoever does that sort of thing needs to go away. But that's surely the wrong response, isn't it? Might not the person who is able to have that sort of power to set people free be able to help them in their time of need? But they don't put their faith in Jesus. They just want to put as much distance as possible between him and them. Go away. And people still respond like that today, as Jesus seems like he's threatening what we value the most. How the crowds valued the pigs above the life of that man. I can live with the fact that he's like that, as long as everything in my life is still fine. But to follow Jesus, well, I'd be handing over control. And goodness knows what might happen to me or to my money or my job or my stuff. People see Jesus as someone who's going to take things from them rather than give things to them. And so they say, go away. And the worst thing, I think, is that when they say go away, he actually does. The other response comes from the man that Jesus helped, which is to say, I'm following you. I'm following you. Verse 18, as Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who'd been demon-possessed begged to go with him. The disciples are lining up to get back on the boats. The man formerly known as Legion, he joins the back of the queue and goes, yes, where are we going? I'm coming with you. Jesus, don't go away. Or if you have to go away, I'm coming with you. I'm following you now. And that's great, isn't it? This man has got his life back. He wants to spend this life with Jesus. Let me come with you. I want to be your disciple. I want to follow you. And that's surely the right response, isn't it? As we see Jesus' merciful power and we say, yes, I want to follow you. So much of the whole point of the book has been to say that we should follow Jesus. And yet the shock in verse 19, Jesus did not let him. Isn't that what the bulk of the book so far and certainly the second half of the book is sort of aiming at, is we should follow Jesus? Well, sort of. This is where we get our final point, which is the call to tell your story. From verse 18, as Jesus was getting into the boat, the man who'd been demon-possessed begged to go with him. Jesus did not let him, but said, go home to your own people and tell them how much the Lord has done for you and how he has had mercy on you. So Jesus calls this man to go and tell his story. So in this instance, following Jesus is going to look like not following him. It's going to look like staying behind. Jesus isn't rejecting him as a disciple. Instead, no, it's quite the opposite. He's sending him on a special mission. One person's even described this guy as the first apostle to the Gentiles. As Jesus takes this man and says, go home, tell your story. Go and tell how much the Lord has done for you. Go and tell them about the mercy that he's had on you. There are people back home who need to hear about this. Some of those people have literally just told Jesus to go away. So when Jesus does go, he leaves somebody behind to continue the work, this really unlikely choice of ambassadors. I mean, he's got a story to tell, though, hasn't he? But he sends him off. Now, we also have good news to share, don't we? And for most of us, it won't look like upping sticks and going and being a missionary somewhere. For some of us, it will. We do need people like Wangui and the family. You know, go and take the gospel to Kenya. Go within Kenya. There's a region where they often, many people can't read, can't write. Many haven't heard of Jesus. Go there. We need people to do that sort of thing. But for most of us, the call is to not go elsewhere, but to stay and speak about God's mercy right here in Wem. To tell our friends, tell our family, our neighbours, our colleagues, what God has done for us. Go and be a missionary. Well, that sounds a little bit too daunting. go and tell your story. Well, that also sounds pretty daunting, to be honest, but I could probably do that. You might think that your story of meeting Jesus is less dramatic than this one. It probably involves fewer pigs. But if you are a Christian believer, then your story is no less miraculous. You were under the destructive power of evil, and Jesus set you free. You were shown his mercy, and now you have a new life. Talk about that. Let's talk about it. Let's not just pass on a few facts that we learnt. Let's tell this personal thing that has happened to us that we just think is so fantastic, and it can happen to you as well. That's what this man does. We're told in verse 20, so the man went away and began to tell, not just to his people, but to tell in the Decapolis how much Jesus has done for him. And all the people were amazed. Decapolis means the 10 cities. So he doesn't just go to Wem, he goes to Shropshire. Wherever he goes, he tells them his story about how much Jesus has done for him. And the response is that people were amazed. And in Mark's gospel, amazed is a good thing. That means people are getting it. Isn't that encouraging? This man of all people, had a more fruitful response than Jesus did. Jesus goes to that place and the response is, go away. This man talks about what Jesus did for him. And these 10 cities go, wow, that's amazing. That ought to encourage us, shouldn't it? We started off thinking about before and after shots, as we've seen here, the destructive power of evil, and afterwards, the merciful power of Jesus. Can you recognize yourself in that man in the tombs? Can you see your desperate, desperate need? Will you look to Jesus to save you? By his death on the cross, he defeated evil. He paid for our sin. He set us free, so don't tell him to go away. Come and be free. Come and follow him. And if we've done that, if we are following him, we have got an amazing story to tell, don't we? Of hope in the face of evil. Of mercy shown to desperate, desperate sinners.